you know, I mean, like, I thought about this with Peyton Sparks, who's transferring from Ball State to IU. I thought, well, he's got 3 years left. And I thought, no, he came in after the COVID season. So he's too young for the COVID year, where there used to be guys that were too old for the COVID year. But now we're cycling in this generation of guys that came along after the COVID season and therefore don't apply for it, or can't apply for it, don't apply to it, I guess I should say. It is just part of it. And it's something where, you know, you don't want to hear about tampering and things like that. But on the other hand, I think in the same way that recruiting can work this way, in the same way that, you know, coaching changes can work this way, coaches talk to each other, coaches, you know, I think one of the best points anybody's ever made, one of the best points I've seen anybody make around all this in recent weeks is, don't burn any bridges anymore, because you may come back. You know, there may be a guy that you recruited out of high school, you didn't get him, but guess what? He's back in the portal and you're still interested. Sparks is a guy that was in the portal last year after the Ball State coaching change. Indiana was interested. They talked to him a little bit.
I thought that was the case. Okay.
And then obviously Michael Lewis comes in. He pulls out of the portal. And then after this season, he goes back in. And hey, that relationship's already there. And boom, boom, boom. The point is, you know, you can, coaches can have a good idea, whether it's their own roster or other rosters, other players they might be interested in, of what might happen at the end of a season without, quote unquote, tampering. And it's just part of the layer of it all now. And it's you know, I think some coaches might tell you they'd prefer some transfers. They'd prefer maybe more guys on their roster that are a little bit, you know, sort of
seasoned.
Yeah, essentially. Maybe you don't have to take so many freshmen. You get a little more time to develop the ones you have because you have fewer of them. But then you can plug and play with some more experienced guys that give you a few more options and things like that. But it's just kind of one of those things that coaches understand now. It's baked into the process. And I think that, you know, there's coaches who will tell you that that people are vacating the profession because they don't want to deal with this. It's chaotic and whatever else. There's other coaches that basically just tell you, hey, this is the job, and we've got to do the job. I think probably what you'd find is maybe some coaches who say, well, now I have a little bit more free time than I used to have in May, in July, in June, in October, because I'm filling some holes where I used to have to really pursue a high school kid really, really hard. Now I'm filling a hole with a transfer kid in April and May, and that's allowing me to be a little bit more selective down the line. It's just part of the equation now. It's part of the formula. It's part of the math, and you've got to find a way to navigate it.
And it doesn't just happen to you or your league. And the transfer portal is two ways. It's not a one-way street. You lose guys while you bring guys in, and that's how it kind of is working. So you brought up Sparks. We'll get to him momentarily. Let's talk about the guys that are out the door. Does it surprise you at all that all three of them were not they weren't all – coming in, well, how do I put this? Two guys were Archie Miller's guys, and one guy was a late addition because of another coaching change when Shaka Smart left Texas. Tamar Bates opened his recruiting. It doesn't always work, but it just never surprises me when it's guys from another regime.
Yeah, well, so obviously Geronimo is that. Duncombe, at least to an extent, is that. Bates was the one guy that was recruited by Mike Woodson and his staff. I think if you're asking me just sort of like the hierarchy, because none of these guys were coming out and saying, I'm leaving, you know.
Sure.
But you could, you know, you look at a player like Logan Duncombe and you can understand why he might say, okay, you know, it just hasn't quite developed for me the way I hoped, and so I'm going to go look for something else. Jordan Geronimo, I think it at times has obviously flashed a lot of potential at Indiana, but again, particularly when you saw kind of the way his playing time waned this season, and he had some injury issues that probably contributed to it, but still, you're not surprised by that. The one that I was probably sort of, I guess, most surprised by, and I preface this by saying I'm not really surprised by any of it anymore.
Yeah.
It's so easy for guys to go into the
portal.
That's
a great word. The word is what? Easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for them to go in.
It's not a hard decision.
Well, and it's not just
because you can stay.
The process is also easier.
Yeah.
As you said, you can pull out of the portal if your coach will have you back. There's a more sort of formal, you know, if we want to call it transfer window. You talk about the deadline's May 11th for the spring. I think we can have maybe a separate conversation about how some of this feels very football driven, and maybe in the future we can examine sort of tailoring the basketball side of it a little bit differently. But either way, the point is the whole process is more formal. It's more out in the open. NIL means that you're able to explore, you know, your own brand value. I mean, like, I think there's going to be guys, maybe a little bit more in football than in basketball, but guys that almost go into the portal just to test their value and just sort of say, well,
what am I worth?
Are there other options out there for me, essentially?
And by that, what do you mean? Like, when someone puts their name in the portal, does some representative of somebody call up and say, hey, I saw you're in the portal. We're going to give you $200,000 if you come to our school?
No, but...
That's illegal, but you can do that.
But well, and it's, again, it's illegal, but it's also like if you know...
Unregulated.
If the collective can, you know, it's illegal, but it's... I think you understand. We're... It's all a gray area. It's all yeah. Versions of a gray area. And
I
it's
can't
all
do
stuff
that,
that
but.
It's all stuff that I think anybody would tell you was happening 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Now again, it's just on the table, it's more formal. But I think that of the three, again, prefacing this by saying I'm never shocked. I'm never floored when a guy goes in the portal. Of the three, the one that I would have been most surprised by was Tamar Bates, partly because Indiana just needs guard depth. You know, I mean, they're going to need guys that can make shots.
And he got a ton of minutes.
And it seems like lineups are going to skew, I don't want to say more guard heavy, but certainly smaller for Indiana. I don't think we're going to be seeing the sort of like, you know, pound the ground, two forward, bully ball style going forward. You know, Mike Woodson has been pretty open about like, I've never built a team around a player like Trayce Jackson-Davis and played through him the way that we did before I came to Indiana. That sort of says, I think, you know, the unspoken piece of that, the between the lines piece of that is when I get a player like Trayce Jackson-Davis, we're going to play that way because he's that good. But, you know, in the broader sense, that's not necessarily what I'm looking for. I thought maybe there was a path to Bates having a bigger role next year, but sometimes guys, you know, sometimes going their separate ways is just
well. And he has a small child, and I know that, I don't think they live here, do they? I don't know how any of that.
I think his family's still in Kansas City.
Well, I mean, that's
I don't know if that's I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Absolutely right, but I mean, that's a pretty big life changing event as well. And if you want to be a good parent and you're not anywhere around your kid, I don't know how that would work. So. Every situation is interesting, awkward, and weird otherwise, but it happens at almost every single school. So now that those players are in the portal, the chances of them coming back are slim and none, and Slim just left?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, more often than not, yes, when a player leaves. I mean, I think that the one time you do see players return is a coaching change. And I mean, we saw this with Mike Woodson. A number of players entered the portal, and then they sort of gave Woodson a chance to kind of sell them on what he was trying to do at Indiana, and a lot of them came back. I think in situations like this where, you know, coaching sort of stability exists, the head coach isn't going anywhere, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a ton of staff turnover. Maybe a guy will get the odd, you know, job offer. We've seen Kenya Hunter's name floated with a couple of head coaching jobs very loosely. But in a situation like this, typically I think when a player goes in, you know, they stay in. And when you see certainly, too, how aggressive Indiana's being in pursuing some guys that are in the portal elsewhere to try and come to Indiana, you sort of feel like, hey, maybe this is also – maybe the program looks at this and says, well, these are opportunities for us elsewhere as well.
And those opportunities are just about around every corner because everybody is looking for talent because everybody is going through this exact same situation. But let's talk – all right, so Sparks is 6'9", 240 and left-handed. Malik Renu is 6'9", 225 and left-handed. Mike Woodson tells us after the Miami game, well, I don't really want to play like that. But here we go. But it's not. You got to have guys in the league, right?
You got to. Yeah, I mean, you do have to. You still got to be able to rebound the basketball.
Absolutely,
you've got to have depth in the post. That is part of playing in the Big Ten. We've also seen Indiana heavily involved with Caden Shedrick, who's the
6'11"
Virginia transfer, who I think in particular, again, really good rebounding the ball, really good shot blocker. You look at Sparks. Shot blocking, not so much there. Face-up offensive game, not so much there. But, and you know, at least a borderline elite rebounder.
Space eater, too, yeah.
And it's worth saying, rebounding is one of those skills that tends to like, if you're talking about what skills translate across levels in college basketball. Yeah,
because scoring is not one of them.
Rebounding does tend to. Rebounding tends to be one where it's just like, if you've got the strength and the instincts and the ability to read the ball off the rim, that goes with you wherever you go.
And that's more important than putting the ball in the basket because...
I'll give you a good example. Norchad Omir, if I'm not mistaken...
Miami.
...started his career somewhere else. Goes to Miami, undersized... Still, frankly, an elite rebounder when you look at his percentages and you look at his averages. That translates, and that's – you've got the two guys that have been your most consistent, dominant rebounding threats across, what, the last three seasons, four seasons? Both of them out the door now. You've got to replace that. Even if you're going to play a little different, even if some of your lineups are going to be a little smaller or you're going to try and attack off the dribble a little bit more, spread teams out more, it's going to be maybe more perimeter-driven in some ways – you have still got to be able to rebound the basketball.
And you have to have guys who will take up space and bang against Edie and bang against Dickinson. And because the Big Ten's not going to get any smaller. The Big Ten didn't put in a limit that says now you can only have one guy 6'10 or better. That's not how that works either. So that is part of it. And whether that works at the NCAA level, I'll save that for tomorrow's discussion. But you got to put your roster together to make it to the NCAA before you can start worrying about what you're going to do in the said tournament. When are we going to know, and I know you don't have the answer to this, but I just want an about here or there. When are we going to know when Xavier Johnson's issue will be heard, resolved, or anything else?
My understanding from talking to people a little while ago is that it should happen relatively soon after the season.
So he can know to get on with his life, that's fair. Right. Sometimes NCAA in my mind doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so, and it's, I believe it may actually be the Big Ten that at least has a hand in granting this. I know it did with Jordan Bohannon. And Bohannon's waiver was granted in mid-May. It's worth saying that was 2020. So everything shut down in March.
Yep.
And they were only figuring out how to gear things back up in a remote way in like mid-late April. So and while something like that would have been important for the reasons you just discussed, you know, that they were, that's when Kevin Warren is trying to balance that with like, are we going to play football? How are we going to play football? How do we get athletes back on campus? Do we get athletes back? All that kind of stuff. So it's not like the first order of business was going to be, all right, let's check the eligibility waivers. Let's get that committee together, essentially. So I would expect it to be sooner rather than later. I can't give you a hard date, but I think that to your point,
you got to look out for the kid. Huh?
There's a desire basically for everybody to have clarity going forward in that kind of situation.
And that's the only thing that's fair because you can't just say, well, yeah, I would have loved to, but I had to wait a month to see if I could or I couldn't do that. So hopefully that will move things along. Your Spidey sense tells you what about Johnson's situation?
Yeah, so it's technically he does not fit one of the two major criteria. You can't play in the second half of your team's season. You can't have played in more than 30% of your team's games.
30%.
Yes, and he's played in like 34-something percent. 30% of 30%, it's rounded up to the nearest whole number. So, or it's rounded to the nearest whole number, I believe. So I think it's somewhere between like 9 and 10. I think technically it's 10. Bohannon played 10. But I'm not sure if the NCAA considers when you put in these multi-team events – if you're allowed to consider those all one game as opposed to four games or whatever it is. The one thing I will say is I quizzed a couple people who used to work in compliance and have moved on to other things in their lives but will have been familiar with this process. And basically the thing they said is that, you know, the face value sort of argument for Johnson doesn't seem to fit the criteria, but schools, programs – tend not to pursue these things and tend not to, you know, sort of say like, oh, we're going to pursue it, we're going to go get it, whatever, unless they're confident they have a good case. So it's kind of one of those things where on the one hand, there is this sort of blanket sort of rule that you can just lay over and say, does he fit these criteria or not? If yes, yes. If no, no. On the other hand, there is gray area. There is precedent from the recent past to say that there's some gray area, and just generally speaking, there's kind of this sense that a school's not going to go pursue this if they don't feel like they've got a compelling case to make for it being granted.
If you're that close, why don't you side with the student athlete and show that you really do care about what they you think?
And I think that we've, there's certainly been, I think it's fair to say, as much as people, including me at times, have criticized the NCAA in recent years, I think it's fair to say there has been a strong bend in recent seasons toward basically just student athlete opportunities and saying, when in doubt, side with giving the athlete.
He didn't play 17 games.
Right. I mean, he was very close to the cut line. Now, the flip side is, you play devil's advocate, you say, well, the cut line's got to be somewhere.
Sure.
Or just don't have one. Just say, well, sure, you can have it back whenever you want it back. Or you can't play in conference games or whatever. Now, obviously, that complicates things because more conferences are moving their games to December. But, you have to have some sort of cutoff.
I understand the letter of the law. I'm more interested in the spirit, because if somebody played 17 games, I'd say, look, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make sense. Well, he missed the whole conference season because he got hurt December 29th in our conference. Well, that's unlucky. And life's not always about lucky, but I don't know. It's the Joe Sixpack rule in me, right? When you watch a game, what do you want the referee to do? Just get the call that Joe Sixpack at home can see.
Yeah.
Oh, you hit the guy in the face. That's two shots. It's not hard. Let's get that one right. We don't need the appendices of, the subjugation of Rule 6.301 suggests if he steps on his foot, that could be a No one cares. No one cares about that. So let's be the NCAA for a minute and say, you know what? You're right on the border there. You want to come back? You want to improve your education and do all this? For me, it's a no-brainer, but we do have to sit and wait. That's just part of how this story goes. So what does Indiana do in the meantime? Do they recruit around, through, and up? Well, they already have two guards coming in. Where do we go for big men? Back into the portal, because it's Ja'Kai Newton and Gabe Cupps, 1'6", I believe, the other 6'3" or 6'4". Those are the two recruits from the high school. Now the rest of the recruiting is spin the wheel. Let's see who Harvard has and Towson and Minnesota. And every time there's a big-name player that comes up, we joked earlier, when you click on that and you see that, you say, oh, he's being pursued by IU and 28 other schools. How do we sort the wheat from the chaff in all of this?
Yeah, I mean,
you know what? Tell me after the break. I'll let you think about that, because everybody wants to know every time Leaky Black's name comes up. Oh, that's a big program. We're a big program. Oh, Caleb Love. Oh, that dude was awesome. He's in the Final Four a couple years ago. Why Indiana? You're going to sell me on that. We're going to listen to Diane Daly's news headlines. The Crazy Horse. I almost got too carried away. I almost forgot we had to do the spots. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood brings you Happy Hour here on WGCL. They also bring you brunch every Saturday and Sunday. You can enjoy it starting at 11 a.m. and watch all of the women's and men's NCAA action on their big screen TVs.
Come together on Kirkwood at the Crazy Horse and catch your favorite NCAA basketball games, including NCAA women's games, on the big screens throughout the restaurant. You get a great view from every seat. Enjoy your favorite spirits, including 300 high-end whiskeys and tequilas, plus 80 craft, domestic, and imported beers. Enjoy their delicious handmade menu items, like pulled pork nachos, hand-dipped fish and chips, or build your own Angus burgers. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood is open daily at 11 for lunch, dinner, or late night. Online at crazyhorseindiana.com.
I'm Diane Daly for Bloomington's Voice, 98.7 WGCL. This news is brought to you by Green and Schultz Trial Lawyers. The Indiana State Police and several other law enforcement agencies are investigating the death of a woman whose body was found near a motel in Oakland City. Officers were called to the scene on Tuesday after motel staff discovered the body in the woods near the Diplomat Motel. Authorities aren't sure how the woman died, and they're waiting for an autopsy to be performed. Until they get the results, they are not ruling out foul play. It's happening more and more in Indiana and across the country. Road rage incidents involving guns are on the increase. According to published reports, there were 66 incidents in 2021, nearly triple the number from the year before. A national research and policy group has found the number of road rage injuries and deaths involving guns has gone up every year in the United States for the past 5 years. Authorities say if you are confronted by an angry driver, call 911, carefully change lanes, get off the interstate, and look for help at a fire station, gas station, or any place where there are a lot of people around. Well, of course, the deadline to file your taxes is now just a little over 2 weeks away. And if you need help this year, AARP Tax Volunteers will be at the Monroe County Public Library's downtown branch through April the 14th. The free assistance is available on a first-come, first-served basis from 2 until 5 on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays. Finally, the student-run cafe at Ivy Tech Bloomington is offering special lunches on Thursdays through the end of April, featuring cuisine from different cultures. The cafe is part of the Hospitality Administration Program on the Bloomington campus. Upcoming menu items include fare from West Africa and the Caribbean, Spain, the Middle East, the Mediterranean, India, and Southeast Asia. Space at the cafe, though, is limited. Reservations are required. Takeout is also available. For your local news, sports, and weather, you can always visit WGCLradio.com. I'm Diane Daly.
What could be more important than crystal clear vision? The Eye Center of Southern Indiana can make that a reality for you. The Eye Center provides cataract surgery, LASIK surgery, and any medical eye care need. The Eye Center's wide range of innovative technology provides the best eye care has to offer. Call the Eye Center today to schedule an appointment with one of our expertly trained doctors at 812-334-1213. That's 812-334-1213.
.540 at WGCL, Glass in the Afternoon. Happy Hour! The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood brings it to you every Monday through Friday. Your Money with David Hayes will follow us at 6 o'clock, and then Zach Gelb and CBS Sports Tonight. We're back tomorrow night after Big Show Friday. We'll have the Women's Final Four pregame at 6:30. Did you see the Louisville-Iowa game did more than any NBA game has this season on ESPN?
Yeah, I was told that people weren't asking for women's basketball content. I believe someone, an enlightened soul that works for certain outlet that rhymes with Bout Trick told me that people weren't asking for women's basketball coverage. It's funny because it seemed like over 2 million people were asking for women's basketball.
Well, there's going to be even more on Friday night because South Carolina versus Caitlin Clark is going to break every record and light that up. I'm surprised they didn't put that on ABC. I really am. I thought they'd get a number. They put the NBA on ABC every Saturday night, but we'll have it on the radio. Take us wherever you're going to go. Tomorrow, men's Final Four, 3:30 pregame Saturday. Women's Natty, as the kids like to say, 3 o'clock for a 3:30 on Sunday and Championship Monday, 6:30 for 9:20. Good luck to Dusty May. Zach and I will talk all the hoops in that general area tomorrow when Osterman joins me again, as we'll get to that. Reds have decided to walk the ballpark, and wild pitch, 4-1, Pirates lead bottom of four. One out. We'll tell you if they can get anybody out. So Hunter Green's day is over. He had a busy 83 pitches in 3 1/3, 3 earned, walked a few, and then the bullpen has walked everybody else. What is that? So, can you hear that? Can you hear that from Great American Ballpark? What is it? It rhymes with ooh. come on, it's game one. We can do this. We can all hang together. Green, 5 hits, 3 earned, 8 strikeouts, 83 pitches. That's a lot, kids. That is a lot. All right, you're IU. You're in the portal. All these big names come in. Our fans go, whoa, we're Indiana. Why wouldn't you want to come here? Mike Woodson, this is great. We'll get everybody's in the portal for a reason, right? Everybody's I don't want to say damaged goods. I don't think that's fair.
No, this is one of those things that's evolved. That there used to be a school of thought that if a kid's transferring, there must be a reason why, and it must not be a good reason. That there was a even pre-portal, I think when the idea of transfers started becoming less taboo about 8 to 10 years ago, you did start to kind of shed this belief that if a kid is transferring, it must be because of grades or behavior, or he's butting heads with a coach, or he's bad in the locker room, whatever. I think kids they have more options now. And so if you feel like for whatever reason your time has run its course at a certain place, you can go to another one. If you're at a low or a mid-major school and you've turned yourself into a really good basketball player, you can take that step up. Obviously, NIL plays a role in it now, and teams, and I think Indiana is one of them, programs that have, you know, the resources around them for a strong sort of NIL setup. That's always going to be a piece of it.
So that's
why
the fans are excited, right?
And it's not necessarily just, you know, it's not always just going to be, I don't know what the word would be. It's not always just going to be, you know, highest bidder in NIL. NIL is just a factor now. It's one of the, do you jive with the coach? Do you bond with the roster? Is the system, is the role, is that stuff appealing to you? And then also, especially at a place like Indiana, where maybe that's more of a conversation,
yeah.
NIL is just a piece of that too.
It's not a deal breaker, it's a deal enhancer.
Well, for some guys it can be. I'm not saying it won't be.
If it comes down to two things and one guy's like,
and I'm not saying there aren't just guys going to the portal thinking like, "Hey, I just want to get more money." Like, I'm not saying that's my point. Is just that it's not just in the way that it was before. It's not any one thing over everything else. It's one thing to one guy. It's another thing to another guy. It's a combination. It's a building of a lot of different factors, and I think that. You know, it's just kind of – it's something you've got to be comfortable with. You've got to be comfortable talking about it, because if you're not comfortable talking about it, operating in it, whatever, yeah. If you're not, everybody else is going to be.
And everybody's feelings are going to be hurt, because there'll be the folks at Ball State or Harvard or Towson who say, well, you know, we put in the hard work here. We did this. And the opposite side of that is, well, I want to try it at the highest level. I haven't tried it at the highest level. It's only one team – and we'll see that next Monday. Only one team at the end of the year is going to be like, wow, that was awesome. Everything was great.
Yeah.
We had great chemistry. We had a great game plan. We really did care about each other. We made all the shots, and we're cutting the nets down. And everybody else, fans included, have to have something else to hope for, because what's the definition of a successful season now? Well, go ask Matt Painter. I don't know. He's getting killed.
Well, and there's also this element of NIL that I think everyone, you know, for all the hand-wringing and all the alarmism and all the, you know, they're running to the halls of Congress, there's also been, I think, this recognition, even from people that work in the NIL space and the collective space and all this, that there was this rush in the first two or three years of, we're just going to dump so much money into it, so we just buy these great recruiting classes and that'll have, you know, it'll be the best. And then what you find out is four teams make the playoff. 68 teams make the NCAA tournament. Only 16 of them can be four seeds. You know, it. And guess what? I'm guessing FAU and San Diego State don't have the largest NIL budgets in the tournament.
Probably not.
But they're still there. It's not just about NIL. I mean, I think the poster child for this, and I'm not trying
is
to
Miami.
Pick on it. Well, sure. Well, no, I was going to say it's Texas A&M football.
Oh, well, all Miami and
the
basketball.
Money, but all the money that went in there, yeah. And then they went 5-7. And so it's kind of this. Everyone has expected, broadly speaking, that this is just like a brand new market. Nobody had any idea how to understand or quantify or enhance or sort of, you know, fashion or foster value. And so we've kind of been doing this dance of like figuring out, well, what's worth it and what's not. And how much do we need? And by the way, athletics departments are still going to need the boosters to pay for some of the other stuff too, because the scholarship bill is still there and the facilities bills are still there and all the debt, you know, all the debt relief or the debt service that's built up because we wanted these brand new facilities for all our different teams. Well, that's still there every year.
Right.
So everybody's expected that sort of the wild-eyed numbers would retreat a little bit in most cases. And again, part of what happens too is, and my business is guilty of this, putting $2 million in a headline feels really good. And it draws attention.
Well, it's an attention goes.
And,
exactly
and
right.
People want to read that. You know, there's the way somebody put it to me, though, is there's 10 athletes that are getting seven figures. And there are 100 athletes that are getting six figures. And 1,000 athletes that are getting five figures. And 10,000 athletes that are getting four figures. And that's a generalization, but it's sort of like.
And everybody else is getting free wings.
We see these extremes when really a lot of guys, they're getting enough to make a difference, especially at a place like Indiana. Anthony Leal pays off his sister's college debt. That's a great story. It's a wonderful example of how NIL changes these kids' lives without being, oh my God, Indiana's burning money to try and win, and they only got to the round of 32. The alarmism and the sort of the hand-wringing and the sort of like, oh my gosh, look at the way that the house is crashing down. A lot of that has proven to be a bit overstated.
God, you said that out loud, the round of 32. You would have thought this was the greatest season since 1976.
Oh, it was the greatest season since 2016, at least.
Well, there you go. Zach Ostrom, an indie star. You know that voice. My job is to reintroduce him. But the interesting part is it worked for Miami. And that's the swinging of it going the other direction. Not to say it'll work for everybody, but here's the thing. Patience is gone. It's not, I need 3 or 4 years to get my system in. I need 3 or 4 years to do this. That's going to be interesting how.
But it might be replaced by parity. And it might be replaced at places that are not going to, because places that were going to be reactionary and fire too soon and demand, you know, success.
They're still going to be run like that.
They're going to be that way no matter what. Again, there's so much of this where it's like, oh, this is NIL. It's like, no. This is just
you guys.
The people that are in charge at this particular place just have a very destructive, self-destructive outlook on whatever. And that was that way before, and it's going to be that way after. But, like, Miami's a great example to me anyway of, okay, Jim Larrañaga's been there a while. He's had some success. He's won some games. Some really good players
Why
have come
Why am I seeing a
come
tilde
through Miami.
Over his N in every
I think it was something he adopted a few years ago because he's in Miami.
Really?
Larrañaga. Ronald Acuña.
Well, I get Acuña.
But
Larrañaga's more but, you know, the,
I think,
the
I think,
Italian.
I think Miami is a good example of the parity insofar as if you have, and they obviously Miami does, and I'm not criticizing or endorsing either way, Miami has boosters that are engaged in NIL at a level that allows them to be really competitive for impact transfers. So Miami's good. Miami's top five, top six in the ACC. They make the tournament most of the time.
Won the regular season.
I'm talking in general, in the last few years. Well, now, because that used to be their baseline. Well, now NIL lets them go get it. Those one or two guys that were, you know, in the past they lost in the round of 32 because they were two guys short. You know, instead of Nigel Pack, it was somebody not as good as Nigel Pack. And instead of Jordan Miller, it was somebody not as good as Jordan Miller. And so Indiana won that round of 32 game 5-6 years ago. And, of course, Indiana will want to be Miami at some point in their own way, in whatever way they build their roster and carve their own path up the mountain. But the point is, I think part of where the parity is coming from, and part of it, too, is the COVID year, and obviously that's eventually going to cycle out of the talent pool. But I think part of where NIL is fostering parity is now suddenly if you've got and you don't need – you know, tens of millions. You just need a booster or two who's willing to engage and provide athletes those resources that suddenly maybe instead of being one or two guys short, you have those one or two guys. So now it's Miami and not Houston. Now it's Miami and not Texas.
We know it's better to have than have not because you don't want to be labeled as cheap, right? If that gets out, that's then doors don't even...
Look at Penn State.
I was going to ask you that. What's more important? Is the name on the jersey tradition and all that, or is it whatever you have in the coffers that you can offer elite-style players? I mean, teams are still going to have to build rosters. Don't get me wrong on that part. We are talking, as you mentioned, about the handful of the handful that could – Trace Jackson Davis, when he was recruited, didn't know any of this was happening, but he benefited from all of it. So now you take Shrewsbury. He's going to Notre Dame. You've got the guy from VCU, like every VCU coach does, leaves and goes to a bigger conference. What do you do? How do you sell? What sells these days? You still have to have those kids. Penn State doesn't really talk about those kids that get into that, but they got Jalen Pickett somehow. So, yeah, I mean, it's just I feel like I'm talking in circles here, but I think that's the hope of college basketball, that we anybody can.
Yeah, and again, I mean, like to your point, on the one hand, Micah Shrewsbury went to Penn State, was able to recruit some impact transfers. You know, I think Seth Lundy was already there, if I'm not mistaken. So he got Lundy better. He got Pickett in. He got Cameron Winter in. He got Funk in. He did something weird. Penn State overachieved. But then on the backside, on his way out the door to a program where maybe there's more resources, he says, you know, one of the things that I just felt was not going to be sustainable was being able to compete when I was going to need to go out and you know, live in the NIL world, and I didn't feel like I could get, and I think there have been, I don't think Shrewsbury said this publicly, to be clear, but there have been people around, that there's been kind of this, and I haven't followed all of it, and I don't want to sound like I'm the expert in it, there's been kind of this infighting around some of, like, the collective space at Penn State of basically, like...
It's all in football.
Well, but there were people that were saying, well, we were giving basketball everything they needed, and then there were other people who were living in the collective space, Not you know, people on a staff or assistant coaches leaking, you know, assistant coaches speaking anonymously, but like people that were living in the Penn State collective space saying basically, at least as I perceive it, like, no, that's not true. You're not telling the truth. There wasn't enough there. We haven't set up this structure that's going to make sure that the hands that need to get fed and so on and so forth. And so that's the, you know, I mean, listen, that's the struggle that there's not a coach in America that's like, oh yeah, I've got enough NIL money. Yeah. Like, trust me, right. There's, you know, and I understand that there's ways that this is supposed to be talked about and not talked about, and there's things that coaches should know and shouldn't know and do know even though they don't know and all that, but like, there's not a coach in America in football or men's basketball that's got enough NIL money. Somebody else has more, and it's basically, the old fishing story used to be that everybody knew how much the recruits that they didn't get got paid to go wherever they went. Now, everybody magically knows what the NIL deal was that pulled that recruit to somebody else. So, there's an element of this that is all just, you know, coaches posturing and gossiping and all, that's always part of it. But, again, like, I can't emphasize enough, this is all just part of the ecosystem isn't just NIL now. Now, that's a big piece of it, and it's going to, if done right, it helps a place like Indiana. But to your point, if done right, it also helps a place like Miami, where, you know, you wouldn't have thought when NIL became the law of the land,
they'd be first in line,
that Miami would be the one that, oh my God, look at that, Miami. Miami, a great tale of A, it bringing them success, and B, a roster that can clearly, you know, because they were, Miami was supposed to melt down. It was supposed to be, well, everybody's going to be jealous of Nigel Pack, and Isaiah Wong is going to hold out if he can't get this deal and do that and whatever else. Well, guess what? They all seem to be having a lot of fun, and they seem to have been having a lot of fun all year long. So it's, none of it is, I don't mean to minimize it. Like, to be very clear, it's a big deal, and it's complicated, and they didn't get it all right. It has created a lot of problems, and there are things that need fixing. There are things that need addressing. On the other hand, it is not as end-all, be-all. It is not as sort of apocalyptic, the world as we know it is coming to an end, as some people would want you to believe.
Yeah, it's not Ricky Rowe getting a tractor, but Brian Bosworth sitting in the sauna with his Corvette out front. We all remember the Barry Switzer, Oklahoma. Hey, Miami, the U, Michael Irvin and the gang, Catholics versus convicts. Remember that? Jeez, imagine having taken that out as a headline today. Holy cow. But, you know, that Miami team was awfully good for a long time down there, and everybody thought, well, you know, you got the record industry down there helping out and doing all this stuff. You're probably not wrong. John Wooden's kids drove Cadillacs. Why? Well, they didn't work hard in the summertime at camp to make all that money. This has been going on forever. And you know what's going to go on forever? This. And you know what? You should. Capitalism is interesting because people only want it to work when it's convenient for them. No. The system works all the time. Not just when you want it, and those who choose to manipulate it, well, they can do so. Will you come back tomorrow and visit? That would be fantastic.
Of course,
I'd love to have you. We will talk to Osterman tomorrow as well. We will get into the basketball that's going to be played on the court. Is there any other, before we let you go, any other movement that you are hearing rumblings about from this roster going forward?
I don't. You never say never.
I know that.
I would be more surprised by any movement from here out the door than I have been by anything that's happened so far. I think what's a lot more likely at this point would be incomings.
You have to. You got to fill the spots. Yeah. And as we mentioned,
in Indiana, there's a number of names out there. Indiana's been working hard in the portal. They've had some visitors. Peyton Sparks was one. They've had some in-homes. I expect them to be bringing more. It's a dead period right now. It's important to remember that, too.
Oh, okay.
It's a dead period until the end of, because all the coaches go to the coaches' convention in Houston at the Final Four. Expect visits to pick up again next week.
We'll expect you back tomorrow. We'll have fun. Big Show Friday. Osterman from the Indianapolis Star at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse, IndyStar.com. We're back tomorrow. Big Show Friday. Joe Smith will join me from 3 to 5, and Osterman will be in the 5 to 6 spot. Your Money with David Hayes is next. Have a great Thursday. Grab that umbrella for tomorrow. We'll talk about all the severe weather when we get back here at 3 o'clock tomorrow. The Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour is over.